Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Hey everyone, this is Laz Jackson of Detroit Bad Boys, and on this week's episode, Ben Gulker and I talk about the latest batch of Jeremy Grant trade rumors, what lessons the Pistons can take from the two teams in the NBA Finals, which player's development is most important for Detroit moving forward, and more. As always, we appreciate your continued support of the podcast. The best way to do that is to share, subscribe, and leave comments. Please leave comments on the discussion post on Detroit Bad Boys. That's the best way for us to have the conversation that we want to have around the podcast. In order to do that, though, you have to follow DetroitBadBoys.com, which you should be doing, because it's the best place on the internet for Pistons news and analysis this offseason. With all that said, time to go to work. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. I am your host, Lazarus Jackson. Pleased, as always, to be joined by my usual co-host, Ben Gulker. How's it going, Ben?
Laz, good to be back. Happy NBA Finals to everybody watching. I'm doing good, Laz. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. I feel like it's best to record when there's like more than one thing that's not just draft stuff to talk about, because we could just go in circles about that for hours, and that's not, I don't know how useful or pertinent or interesting that is. But so the first thing I want to start off with is the Jeremy Grant trade rumors that we got earlier last week from The Athletic, both James Edwards III and Chris Kirshner, who I believe is the Hawks beat writer. They discussed a open framework of a Jeremy Grant trade to Atlanta, featuring basically the 16th pick and like a mix and match of some other stuff. So, Ben, how does trading Jeremy Grant for the 16th pick and Bogdan Bogdanovic strike you?
Yeah, this rumor was interesting in that there was a rumor, but underwhelming, I guess, is the word I would use. You know, the 16th pick, you know, there's who knows what's going to be available, but I don't know. I don't think there's a whole lot to be jumping up and down about at the 16th pick. I mean, if it's a throw in as part of a larger package, okay, I'm interested. But when that larger pick is Bogdan Bogdanovic, I mean, nice player, right? Like perfectly adequate role player, no disrespect intended. But I think I'm hoping for something a little more interesting. And to be perfectly honest, I'm not as high on Jeremy Grant as a lot of other people are, right? But honestly, not thrilled with that offer.
Yeah. What about the 16th pick and the, I think, $15 million you'd be able to create in cap space by getting Danilo Gallinari's partially guaranteed contract and then cutting him?
Yeah. So similar, only because, look, I think the guys you'd be looking to sign, right? So Pistons kind of in the market for all of the free agents. We've kind of talked around for several weeks and months at this point, except maybe you can throw your hat in the ring for two of those guys, which is maybe a little bit more interesting. But I think probably any one of those guys by themselves is probably right around the same of the same tier sort of player as you'd consider Jeremy Grant to be. Mm-hmm. So I guess you're just kind of swapping Jeremy Grant for one of those guys in the 16th, which I guess is kind of like, oh, okay, I guess like, okay, you're giving me the 16th pick for a chance at getting a guy who's roughly equivalent to Jeremy Grant. And I may or may not get that guy, and I may or may not have to pay him more than I want to get him. So I don't know. I'm lukewarm to cold on both of these, I think. What do you think, Les?
Yeah, I was a little disappointed as well that it seems like the market for Jeremy Grant is not like what we would like it to be. You know, obviously we've all talked about the seventh overall pick to Portland. It sounds like they are chasing a bigger fish, hoping to get a better player than Jeremy Grant with that seventh overall pick. There was the rumor about OG Anunoby being unhappy in Toronto. OG is younger and probably a little bit more advanced as a shot creator than Jeremy Grant is at his younger age. And so you'd understand like why they'd be interested in like trading the seventh overall pick for a guy like that. But like, I don't think Portland is going to make that pick. Right. I think they trade it for somebody. It's just kind of a matter of like who they end up trading it for. I will say I liked the idea of Bogdan Bogdanovic in a backcourt next to Cade Cunningham. We've already seen what Bogdanovic can do with like Trae Young as a backcourt partner. Very good shooter, just enough like off the dribble game to keep things moving. Like he's like 6'7", 6'8", and so he's also tall. He's not a great defender. I remember in particular there were times where like Cade was going right at him when the Pistons played Atlanta. And so it's like, okay, maybe he's not the type of defender we would like him to be in a backcourt next to Cade Cunningham, but it would be like a really interesting offensive player next to Cade. However, Bogdanovic, I believe, is like already 29. Yeah. And so it's a similar thing with Jeremy, right? Where this guy is not going to be a long-term part of your core because of his age. And so if you're just like swapping in a guy who fits the starting lineup as a forward for a guy who fits the starting lineup as a guard, like kind of, and you get another first round pick, which is nice, but like not again, like I don't think we're looking to get like an instant impact or like an instant impact guy at 16. And even if you pick a developmental guy, like, you know, those are going to take some time, and who knows like what kind of player that ends up being. I mean, there are guys I like that I think will be there at 16. Like Malachi Branham, I had him 10th on my first big board. I think I've seen him in like that 14, 15, 16 range. Tari Eason out of LSU, Bryce Simon, Motor City Hoops, just did a great breakdown of Tari Eason and how he would be an interesting fit kind of in that late lottery, early non-lottery pick. He seems like a guy who would offer like a similar development curve as Jeremy Grant, right? He seems like a similar type of player as Jeremy Grant was earlier on in his career. And he's already like 21, I think. So he's like a little bit older than people imagine. Jaden Harvey, another guy that I know that a lot of people were clamoring for kind of earlier, would be that like bucket getter shot creator guy that people still kind of think we need. And I don't disagree with that notion. Like there are interesting players they could get at 16, but I think you're right, Ben, in that like you're hoping those guys end up as good as Jeremy Grant. And so it's like, why, you know, you just keep Jeremy Grant, I guess. But the other part of this that we haven't talked about as much is like the extension aspect for Jeremy, right? Like have you come around on a possible extension for Jeremy if we can't find good value for him in trade? How are you feeling about, you know, Jeremy Grant sticking around as a Piston if he can't be traded for?
Well, so I think there's two ways of looking at it. The first is look at last season through, you kind of have to slice it right in two different chunks. The almost in thirds, right? Like I'll slice it in two ways and let you slice it in three ways.
Okay.
The first is like that awful chunk where the Pistons at one point were like 4-20 something when Jeremy Grant had played. And it was awful. Cade was out for part of that. Then Jeremy was out for part of that. And then there was that chunk of time where they were playing together. And there was just this awkward back and forth where no one really knew what to do and who was supposed to run the offense and who was supposed to defer to whom. And it was just awkward, right? There were those really ugly stretches in fourth quarters where no one was supposed to take shots and dribble and everything. And then there was that later stretch in the season before they were really tanking hard, where they sort of looked okay together, right? And it, if you were to assume that the that last bit of the season is what the offense could look like, then I think you can sort of understand how Jeremy Grant, although too old to be part of the Cade Cunningham future, right? Like Cade Cunningham thinking 25 and on is when he's really in his prime, right? Mm-hmm. Like Jeremy's gonna be too old by then. You can certainly imagine Jeremy Grant as veteran forward who's part of restoring the Pistons to playoff contention, right? The other way I can think about this, so the second way I could think about this is maybe there's some tepid reaction to trading for Jeremy Grant with 1 year left on his contract, and maybe there's more interest in trading for Jeremy Grant when you can acquire him for the remainder of his prime. So maybe if the Pistons can sign him to a fair market value extension that, you know, essentially locks him up through 29 or 30 years old, maybe he's viewed as more of an asset than just sort of a 1 year rental. I don't know that that's the case, but I can sort of talk myself into some teams thinking about it on those terms. And, you know, I think Jeremy, if he can prove that he's willing and ready to embrace that sort of second, he can still be an effective three level scorer, even though he's not the primary ball handler and initiator. I can see teams being willing to maybe take a little bit more of a long-term risk if he's re-upped on a reasonable contract, you know, 6 months from now, January of next year, on a reasonable extension. So that's kind of how I think I could come to terms with Jeremy Grant on an extension.
No, I think that's the second point you made about the extension, making him maybe easier to trade, is a good one. You know, I remember the reports we first got when we first heard that Jeremy Grant was being made available, I guess, not shopped, but like made available in trade. The reports were that, like, he, you know, had gotten used to being the number one option, didn't want to be anything less than like a second option on a good team. And I think the way that he kind of delegated like the shot creating and the ball handling burden to Cade Cunningham at the latter end of the year shows that, like, he's ready to, he's like okay with taking on like a tertiary instead of secondary role for a good team or for any team. What I really think is that, like, if he wants that extension and he wants the extension at the number that's been rumored, which I think is like 28, 27 million. It's like, he does not want to be paid like the third best player on a team. He wants to be paid like the second best player on a team. So if you give him the extension and just like have him fill that role, I think he'd be amenable to that personally. You remember, this is a guy who came out, processed Sixers, got like a hinky special, and was making not that much money for the big majority of his career. And so him being able to cash in on what, like these like 5 year prime, or on his 5 year prime with like one $60 million deal and like another like $118 million deal. Like, I think he'd be really happy with that.
I think what he needs to show too, Laz, is that, you know, if he's not responsible for expending a lot of energy initiating the offense, he's got to show that he can still lock down defensively. Because I think anybody who's going to acquire him is going to want to see some of what he did in Denver defensively while still being capable of scoring the ball a lot. And, you know, I don't think we saw a lot of that from him last year. So I think he's got to prove some of that on the court, at least if the Pistons are going to trade him next season, if that's a real thing that's on the table. To me, if I were trading for Jeremy Grant, I think I got to see more of that. You got to show me that you can score and still be capable of locking down at two or three positions when I need you to.
Yeah, I think we saw some of that like in bursts, but not consistently, not from a like a week to week perspective. Absolutely. And I think a lot of this has to do with the draft as well. So we should move on to the draft, I guess. So the way I've been thinking about it is, if the Pistons are able to line up a Jeremy Grant trade that obviously alters who they're comfortable with taking at number five overall. At The Athletic, James Edward III said he ranked his choices for the Pistons as such. He put Keegan Murray, the forward from Iowa, at the top. Then he put Benedict Mathurin and Shaedon Sharpe, the guards from Arizona and high school, respectively, kind of on a second tier by themselves. And then he had Jaden Ivey on a third tier, kind of underneath those three guys. I think, obviously, that if the Pistons lined up a Jeremy Grant trade, it seems like Keegan Murray would instantly fill that starting lineup role that they had envisioned for Jeremy, offering a lot of the same things. But, you know, if they're not able to trade Jeremy, it does kind of seem like they'd be more amenable to a guard to put next to Cade in that backcourt. But is that the ranking that you were kind of also seeing, Ben? Like, how do you feel about that scenario with Keegan Murray on the top, Ben Mathurin and Shaedon Sharpe kind of in the middle, and Jaden Ivey on the bottom?
Yes, I can live with that, Laz. I think, you know, personally, I think if we're looking at highest upside and highest ceiling, I'd probably flip the two top tiers. So I'd probably put Ben Math and Shaedon Sharpe like as the first tier, and mm-hmm. put Keegan Murray second tier. I agree with Ivy being on the bottom of my list. I have some concerns. I know his athleticism was off the charts, but I just have some skill set concerns and some shooting concerns, which you've talked about at length, especially the shooting concerns. But, you know, if the Jeremy Grant trade is in the cards, I think it would make sense to maybe select a guy who has less bust potential, who's a little bit more of a known quantity, who slides into a position of need. That makes sense to me. But clearly shooting guard remains a position of need too, right? So I think I would be fine, though. All three of those guys, I think I would be okay with and I can get excited about. You know, whether or not, especially Ben Math or Shaedon Sharpe are going to be available at five is interesting. I've seen a lot of big boards moving those guys, both of those shooting guards, up and down past four and five, like in either direction, kind of depending on the day and depending on who you're listening to. So it'll be interesting to see who, if all three of those guys are on the board, I think it'll be interesting on draft night to see which direction Weaver goes with. But I guess, long story short, I'm not going to be a fan who gets angry if all three of those guys are available and Weaver picks any one of those three. I think I'm going to be perfectly content with. I'm going to talk myself into being happy about it.
Yeah, I think that is definitely something that gets lost when we're talking about this. Like you mentioned us both being kind of low on Jaden Ivey, and I think people are mistaking that for, like, we would not be excited if the Pistons selected Jaden Ivey. Ivey's you see the potential, right? It's just we have a lot of questions, but you would hope that if he were a Piston, like, the coaching staff and would be able to alleviate like a lot of those concerns and help him develop as a player. The way I've been thinking about the draft is, like, if they line up a Jeremy Grant trade that they're comfortable with, they take Keegan Murray, and then they look to take a shooting guard with like another first round pick. If they don't line up a Jeremy Grant trade, I've been thinking like they probably just take Benedict Mathurin at five and roll out like Cade, Benedict Mathurin, Sadiq, Jeremy, Isaiah Stewart. And then like you can figure out whether or not you want to extend Jeremy later. You can trade him later after draft night, et cetera, et cetera. And then like if Jaden Ivey does not go top five and someone blows your doors off with a trade package to trade down so that they can select Jaden Ivey and you could still get, you know, a guy you like, if you could still get like a Benedict Mathurin at like, you know, eight or nine or something like that, I think they'd do that. And so it's, you know, there are a lot of ways this draft seemingly can go. It does really seem like Jaden Ivey is going to be off the board by the time the Pistons make their selection. And so he's like, the workouts have been great. I know there were some reports about, you know, character concerns with Jaden Ivey. I think those are questions, but I don't think those are like going to like knock him out of the top five or anything like that. But Yeah, I've just been operating under the assumption that Jaden Ivey is going to be gone by the time the Pistons make their selection. So I'm not even like considering him as an option for the Pistons. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting. The draft really starts when the Pistons make their selection. They get to kind of dictate how the rest of the lottery kind of plays out from like a 8, 9, 10 perspective, which is, I think, where they would like to be. They want the optionality, right? They want, as we're seeing with the Jeremy Grant trade rumors, right? They want multiple pieces. They notice, Ben, that they have like a hole. If they trade Jeremy Grant, they will have a hole at power forward, and they still have a hole at shooting guard. And I think that's why we're seeing Benedict Mathurin's name pop up so much, is because they're aware that they need a good backcourt partner next to Cade. And it does kind of seem like Jalen Brunson is has priced himself out of where the Pistons would be comfortable obtaining him this postseason. And so, yeah, it'll be really interesting to see where the draft lines up. I know I see from the consistent like chatter on social media, on Detroit Bad Boys, like on the board, like people are really interested in like the future of this pick. But like you mentioned, Ben, like I think like all four of these guys are good options. Like I don't think there's a bad options the Pistons like would be willing to select at 5, which I think is a good thing.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4/3/2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
All right, Ben. Next thing I want to talk about, Jack Kelly, friend of the podcast, Jack Kelly. Shout out to him for doing something also not draft related. He talked about the player development steps that each of the young guys the Pistons have drafted in the last couple of years in the first round needed to take in order to make that that next step next season. For Cade Cunningham, it was ball security / decision making. For Isaiah Stewart, it was scoring on the perimeter. For Killian Hayes, it was offensive aggressiveness. For Sadiq Bey, it was scoring efficiency. And for Isaiah Livers, it was movement shooting. So Ben, which one of those steps for those players is most important for the Pistons to make progress in your mind?
Yeah, good stuff from Jack. Jack's doing stuff at DBB and also elsewhere, putting out a lot of stuff. Shout out to Jack.
Yeah, shout out to Zach, to Jack.
Doing a lot of good stuff, Jack. Keep it up, man. It's cool to see. I left a comment on the post. I think you can pretty much copy and paste shooting efficiency for just about everybody on the roster right now.
Yeah.
Maybe the exception of Livers, who shot the ball well in a limited role. But yeah, I mean, roster guys who are shooting at league average and below is not going to win a lot of games. But I think realistically, what I'm hoping to see from Cade is absolutely some strides forward in ball security and decision making. We did see him trending the right direction in terms of his scoring efficiency from month to month. It was pretty much month over month improvement. If you look at the trend line, which is awesome, I think we can continue to expect incremental improvement in that direction. But look, I'm hoping for a couple things. First of all, I think strength and conditioning. He obviously started the season going the wrong direction on that with the injury. But I think he needs to get stronger and he needs to get in better shape. And I think that's going to help because I think he just got himself into situations where he was in double and triple teams and he was just out muscled a few times. And then the second thing is I think improving the roster and keeping guys healthy is going to help because as we've talked about, he faced, I think he closed the season leading the league in double teams faced. And we saw screenshot after screenshot after film session after film session of him literally facing, they were technically doubles teams, but I mean, literally five guys facing Cade with their hands up, right? So it's hard to not turn the ball over when you're facing that. So if we can see some incremental improvements to shooting throughout the roster, hopefully that's going to help him alleviate some of those turnovers as well. So ball security decision-making, I think, are going to improve by Cade getting in better shape, by just some natural progression. And I think incremental improvements and internal development throughout the roster is really going to help Cade make a significant improvement there. So that, I'm going to call my shot a little bit. I think we're going to see Cade make some natural developments and improve in that direction. And then the second thing I'll point out, and then I'll let you hop on this question, Laz, is I really do think Sadiq is going to improve his three-point shooting. I think we saw him, you know, really focus on his off the dribble game, off his on his individual offense. And I think his three-point shooting just took a little bit of a step back as a result of that focus. And I think we're going to see him take a step forward on that this year. I think, you know, again, I think, you know, he's made some real tangible improvements that are going to stick. But I think, again, he's not going to have to carry the load so much because there's going to be some other guys there to carry some of the weight. And I think that's going to lead to an uptick in his three-point percentage. And I think he understands he needs to improve that in order to have the kind of career and payday he wants to have when his rookie contract ends. So I think that his scoring efficiency, particularly that three-point shooting, is going to make a comeback next season.
Yeah, I agree with that. I hope that it's like the player Sadiq was at the beginning of last year is not the player we think he's going to be moving forward. And so even if he just plays as well as he did to close last year and doesn't have the horrible start to the season, sure, I think you see him up in like the 37, 38 three-point percentage range that you would ideally like him to be at. Well, I mean, like ideally you'd like him to shoot like 45% from three, but you know, I think that's a little bit unrealistic to be able to expect. Of the five guys listed, I think actually the most important development I want to see this offseason and moving forward is actually from Isaiah Stewart. If Isaiah Stewart just was willing to be a little bit more aggressive offensively, be more willing to look for his shot on the perimeter, make defenses account for him offensively in a way that they often didn't have to this season, I think that would be a really big step forward for him and the team, right? Like, we talked a lot about how Cade Cunningham needed a lob threat, needed a big man outlet to be able to run efficient, like, pick and roll offense. If you could get that from Isaiah Stewart as a shooter, as a, you know, as a perimeter scorer, pulling the big men out of the paint, opening up driving lanes, opening up passing lanes for everybody else, I think that would be huge. You know, we've talked about in past episodes the necessity of another big man to pair with Cade, right? We've talked about a DeAndre Ayton, we've talked about a Mitchell Robinson. The Pistons, you know, made the midseason acquisition of Marvin Bagley specifically to give Cade like another like pick and roll partner and a lob threat. If they see offensive strides from Isaiah Stewart moving forward, and they don't have to go out and get and they strike out on a DeAndre Ayton, and they don't have to go out and get like a Mitchell Robinson or a Mo Bamba or something else, or some other player, like that'd be really big for the Pistons. We love Isaiah Stewart's defense. We love the rim protection and switchability he's shown at different parts of his career. If he's able to bring it more often offensively, like that's a really solid starter at the NBA level for like the next, you know, 7-8 years. And so being able to have that without having to expend, you know, like another $30 million for DeAndre Ayton or another, you know, $8 million or whatever for Mitchell Robinson would be great. Would be great in my mind. The other thing, I think you're right to say that like we need to see improvements around the roster, or around Cade on the roster in order to get more out of him. I like that's why we're seeing the rumors for Bogdan Bogdanovic. That's why we're seeing the rumors for like Benedict Mathurin and Shaden Sharp. It's like I think they understand that like you need a little bit more perimeter shot creating in the backcourt next to Cade, but you're absolutely right, Ben, in that we saw the scoring efficiency tick up month over month. We saw the turnovers. The turnovers kind of fluctuated in that month of February when he was really, really good. I think the turnovers were down and then kind of went back up in March and April. But yeah, like I foresee really big things for Cade Cunningham next season. And I know like that makes me a total psychic, right? Like everybody foresees great things for Cade Cunningham next season. But yeah, I almost want to take it as a given that we will see a more efficient, less turnover prone version of Cade Cunningham next season. I'm really looking forward to that. All right, Ben, we'll move a little bit outside of the Pistons to talk about the finals, but I'm going to keep the Venn diagram circle going a little bit. So obviously the head coach of the Boston Celtics is Ime Udoka. The Boston Celtics are in the NBA finals. He mentioned offhandedly as a question to another thing, or as an answer to another thing, that he was a finalist for the Detroit Pistons head coaching position that was filled by Dwayne Casey. You know, obviously Dwayne Casey is the coach of the Pistons and has been for a long time, and we've had our ups and downs with Dwayne, but for the most part, he's been fine. But Ime Udoka is coaching a team in the finals, and so he's probably done a little bit better than Dwayne Casey maybe would have. How did you feel knowing that another coaching candidate that the Pistons could have had is now coaching a finals team, Ben? Do you want to switch?
Fair question. You know, Laz, I'm going to be honest, I'm not sure it changes a whole lot about the history of the Dwayne Casey era. You know, coaches can't prevent players from freak injuries, right? Rewinding the clock a little bit, and we won't relitigate the Blake Griffin, Andre Drummond era too much. But, I don't think a coach is going to prevent Blake Griffin's leg from essentially deteriorating from underneath him, right? Maybe a different coach could have managed minutes a little bit different, and maybe that would have delayed the injury somehow. I don't know. That's a whole lot of hindsight cherry picking, right?
Yeah.
Maybe a different coach could have persuaded Andre Drummond to change the way he played a little bit, but I don't know. We've seen Andre Drummond since he left Detroit, right? He hasn't changed a whole lot. I think Andre Drummond, by the time Dwayne Casey arrived, was pretty much Andre Drummond. So I don't know. I think probably that team still gets blown up no matter who's coaching, right? There was a quote from that piece you linked from Jackie McMullen in our notes, which I'll let you mention in a minute. I don't think there's a coach in the league that could have handled the disruption that Boston had between Tatum, Brown, and Smart and bring those three back together after a public altercation and lead him to the finals. It's kumbaya. I love you over there. You know, Laz, you were one of the first guys I heard talk about this. The Pistons have had absolutely no public disruption, and they've been essentially trying to lose for two seasons. That's pretty uncommon. And I think Dwayne Casey Diller deserves a whole lot of credit for that. So, you know, thinking back over the course of Dwayne Casey's career, I think that's pretty much a trademark of his, right? He's a player's coach in the sense that he knows how to manage players and develop relationships. So I think Dwayne Casey deserves a lot of credit for that as well. You know, so obviously Udoka deserves a tremendous amount of credit. He's got a tremendous pedigree. What he's doing in his first season is absolutely phenomenal. Look, there were a whole lot of pundits ready to blow this Celtics team up, roughly halfway through the season. Mm-hmm. And then they have just gone on a tear, which continued through game one of the NBA Finals, where they essentially dismantled the Warriors on their home floor in the fourth quarter. I mean, just absolutely incredible display of shooting and offense, accompanied by just an incredibly stifling defensive effort of one of the most potent offenses, you know, in the NBA. So especially what that team is able to do defensively this season, clearly Udoka deserves a tremendous amount of credit. Tatum emerging as one of the best players in the NBA, the personality management, all of those things, I think Udoka deserves a tremendous amount of credit for. Would I swap the two coaches? Okay, sure. If I'm choosing between the two, do I think Udoka is probably a better coach? Sure, I do. Do I think that would change anything about where the Pistons are currently? I'm pretty skeptical, my friend. I think the Pistons still would have blown up the Blake Griffin, Andre Drummond team. I think they still would have probably tried to lose for draft picks. you know, would there have been some philosophical differences about how they would have developed certain players they would have picked? Probably. Would that have moved the needle a whole lot? You know, I don't know, man. I don't know. I think Sadiq Bey has been a developmental success. I think Isaiah Stewart has been a developmental success. I think so far, Cade Cunningham has been a developmental success. And I think those three things, you obviously have to give a tremendous amount of credit to the players, but I think you also have to give at least some credit to the coaches. So, I mean, Udoka's clearly a fantastic coach. And yeah, I would give the nod to Udoka, but I don't think you can just say, oh, you know, definitely Dwayne Casey, inferior, he's got to go or anything like that. I'm absolutely not on that bandwagon at all.
Yeah. You running through the counterfactuals was like actually pretty clarifying for me. I agree with you that I think we can say that Ime Udoka like did a really amazing job with the Boston Celtics this year, his rookie year, his first year as a head coach. But if he were handed the Detroit Pistons, like that does not mean the Detroit Pistons were going to make the finals, right? Like the roster construction is just so different that it does not seem like he would have that kind of success right away with this team. And it was really interesting to read that profile of Udoka in The Ringer by Jackie McMullen. Udoka is a guy who has really had to fight for everything he's ever gotten in his career, and that makes him very like unafraid of conflict. And so I think that made him uniquely qualified to handle this Boston Celtics team, right? You talked about, or you alluded to kind of the disagreements between Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Marcus Smart. You know, Marcus Smart coming out earlier in the year and saying like those two guys need to pass the ball more, with the implication being to me, which is a hell of a thing to say when you're Marcus Smart and you're shooting like a career like 33% from three. But like they needed to get that stuff out in the open. They needed to be able to have a guy willing to say to Jason and Jaylen, like, yeah, he's absolutely right, but also, you know, say to Marcus Smart, it's like, but like you, that doesn't just give you license to do whatever you want, right? Like you also have to like hold up your end of the bargain defensively. Getting like Jason Tatum to be able to buy in and make strides, like real strides as a defensive player this season was huge for them. The schematic stuff he did defensively, turning Robert Williams from like a traditional drop center to kind of this like free safety roamer on the backline guy, and having Al Horford kind of operate as their regular drop guy, like that was a really interesting like twist on like what you could do defensively with two bigs, and it's paid a lot of dividends for them. But yeah, like if you give Ime Udoka, right, like Isaiah Stewart and Jeremy Grant and Sadiq Bey, like it's going to look a lot different than if you give him, you know, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Robert Williams, right? Like it just is. And so I think that the running through the counterfactuals, like, yeah, like would, like maybe Udoka is a better coach, but would it have changed anything meaningfully about the last couple of years for the Pistons? Like, no. It's like I pretty much agree with that. I think that's where we're at. But at the same time, I think that this points to the front office being able to properly identify head coaching candidates. And, you know, when we're thinking about Dwayne Casey's successor, which I do think is coming, maybe not like next year, but maybe in the next, you know, couple of years after that, it gives me hope that like at least that they're able to identify like up and coming coaching talent, right? And you know, maybe that next guy for the Pistons is on the bench, maybe the next guy for the Pistons is on another team, but it does make me feel better about what the future non-Dwayne Casey led Pistons look like from a coaching perspective. Absolutely. All right, Ben, speaking of the NBA Finals, it's been interesting to me the like roster construction we've seen from the two teams in the Finals, the Celtics and the Warriors. The bulk of their rotation players are drafted and developed, like homegrown. Like obviously there are notable exceptions, right? Like Andrew Wiggins has played a really important role for the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. Obviously like he was acquired in a trade. Al Horford, you know, left and came back and obviously started his career like with the Hawks, I think. right? Yeah, he was with the Hawks. But like he's been a really integral part. They obviously, the Celtics also like really, they made the midseason trade for Derek White, and that's been big for them. Derek White was really big in game one. But, you know, like Steph and Clay and Draymond, those are all draft picks. Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, and Jaylen Brown, those are all draft picks. Robert Williams, draft pick. Jordan Poole, draft pick. You know, even a guy like Kuminga and Moses Moody, who have had roles for this team earlier in the playoffs, didn't necessarily play important minutes in game one, but, you know, played worthy roles for this team earlier in the playoffs. Like those are draft and developmental guys. So Ben, do you think the Pistons have to draft and develop their own guys to be able to find the same level of success? Is this a blueprint the Pistons should be looking to follow? Or, you know, I guess, is there another way that the Pistons can kind of get to this upper echelon of basketball competition?
Well, I think they're kind of already following the blueprint to some degree, right? I mean, you've got Cade Cunningham, who we hope is a superstar, and you've got at least two guys in Sadiq and Stewart who you hope are part of your rotation moving forward, right? So, you know, I think historically you win a championship by having a couple stars, at least one star, and your best chance is to draft them, right? Or your second best chance is to trade for them. And then, you know, I think the last 10 years or so, what we talk about as super teams through free agency is sort of a newish thing, I guess, I think you could say. But really, that tends to be limited to these really big market teams. And I think the Pistons can pretty much rule themselves out of that, right? So
yeah.
I think if you're the Pistons, you almost have to go in on, at least for the short term, you have to go in on Cade becoming a superstar. You have to go in on your current guys and developing them as much as you possibly can. And you have to look at the assets you have via trade, because that's, you know, one of the best ways to acquire talent, because you're not going to be able to rely on free agency other than, you know, look historically what they've been able to add, right? The Mason Plumleys, the Kelly Olynyks, those caliber of players. Jeremy Grant, at least in some ways, is somewhat of an exception to the rule, right? Look back at the last 5, 7, 8 years of Pistons history in terms of free agency. They just don't have a track record of adding big names. I think about the way that the previous championship team was built. Rip Hamilton via trade, Tayshaun Prince via the draft, Chauncey Billups lucked into him via the mid-level exception, Ben Wallace lucked into him via the Grant Hill trade, Rasheed Wallace via trade, Memo via the draft. So yeah, I think it remains the case that you look for the draft and for trades, and then you look to develop those guys that you've drafted as the primary way to do roster building. If you're not, you know, the Lakers, the Heat, the Knicks or the Nets, or, you know, one of the other big markets that I'm forgetting off the top of my head. And I think especially right now, if you're the Pistons, you are betting the farm on Cade Cunningham becoming a superstar, and you're looking to push the rest of your chips in on developing and acquiring talent around him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's fair to say Cade will at least be like a star in this league. Yeah. And so if you need three guys, you have one, you probably want to be able to draft the other one, and then you can kind of acquire the third one however you can. And that third guy like does not have to be at the same like upper echelon as the first two guys. Like I'm thinking about this in particular for like Milwaukee, right? Last year's champions. Mm-hmm. They draft Giannis. They trade for Middleton very, very early in his career, obviously. And they develop those two guys to a point where they are championship contenders, but like aren't quite able to get over the hump. So they make the really big Jrue Holiday trade to get that third guy. Again, Jrue Holiday, really good player. All defense level player, but like not quite the same level of offensive threat as Giannis and Chris Middleton. But that third guy puts them over the hump. Now they're a championship caliber team. They win a championship. You know, the only thing that prevents them from, you know, perhaps winning another championship is an injury to Chris Middleton. Mm-hmm. Phoenix, kind of similar situation, right? You have Devin Booker, you have DeAndre Ayton. Like you make the run in the bubble, and you feel really good about your team. And then you go out and get Chris Paul, right? And that kind of elevates you to the level of, you know, finals contender slash best regular season team this season, with obviously the very very unexpected and not altogether positive end of this year's season, but like you see where that gets you. Steph, Clay, and Draymond, right? Like you draft Steph and Clay in the first round. I think Clay was a lottery pick. I know Steph was a lottery pick. And you draft and develop those guys, and then Draymond you draft in the second round, and you know he develops into something you weren't really. I don't think anybody was expecting Draymond to be like this caliber defender and ball mover for a team. And that really only works because of the symbiosis of those three guys. But again, like Draymond, not the level of offensive threat that like Steph and Clay were at their peaks or even are right now. And so, you know, that's how you assemble that. So yeah, right now the Pistons have Cade. Maybe Sadiq gets to be your second best guy. Maybe whoever they draft this year gets to be your second best guy. Maybe that's Keegan Murray. Maybe that's Shaedon Sharpe. Maybe that's Benedict Mathurin. I do think people are underplaying Benedict Mathurin's upside. Like I think he's only 19 right now and already played 2 years in college and has played really well and seems to be a gamer and really wants to play high level, like meaningful basketball. And I think that's being underplayed. I think that's a reason why the Pistons like him so much. But yeah, you get those two guys together, and hopefully your third guy comes via trade. Maybe your third guy is like whichever one of the guys it's Sadiq Bey or Benedict Mathurin, right? Like maybe that's your third guy. But yeah, I think that you, especially in the Detroit Pistons market, you cannot look to free agency to be the savior. You can't look to free agency to max out your roster, right? I know the Pistons have talked about acquiring DeAndre Ayton, and like he would kind of be the biggest free agent signing that they've made in quite some time, you know, even a bigger signing than Jeremy Grant was. But you know, it's because of his restricted free agency, it's hard to say like the Pistons are for sure getting him, even if they offer him the best contract. Phoenix is exploring sign and trade possibilities, I think, as well. It's like even if you can't put together the best package for DeAndre Ayton, you probably might not be able to get him. And so yeah, I think it'll be. But I think the most consistent thing you can do is just draft and develop your own guys and like see how far that takes you. See what kind of concessions and moves you need to make around the guys you draft and develop in order to take you to higher levels. Absolutely.
Well, I think the other thing it underscores too, Laz, is like I've said this more times than I can count, but it requires a tremendous amount of luck to get to the NBA finals. Like you've got to win the number one pick and get a Cade Cunningham, but then you also have to draft Jordan Poole and Draymond Green, and they have to become way better than you think they are ever going to be, right? So like the Pistons are also going to need to get lucky again too. And maybe that's Sadiq Bey, right? Like who saw Sadiq Bey coming? So, you know, we got to stay hopeful as well.
No, absolutely. I mean, maybe this time in 3 years, we're looking forward and Isaiah Livers is our Jordan Poole. Like, who knows, man? Like anything's possible, I guess.
And I will never let you forget where he went to college if that happens. I'm just going to say it.
You know what? If Isaiah Livers is a dude who leads the Pistons to a championship, I'll be happy with it. I'll take it. Yeah. We need some more Spartans in the Pistons system though. Get Max Christie up in here. Let's figure this thing out. Ben, this has been a good pod. I'm glad we were able to talk about stuff that wasn't just the draft. As you mentioned, kind of on Twitter, the draft discussion this year has been kind of exhausting.
Yeah.
And not as fun. I mean, like last year was fun because we had the number one pick, right? But even, you know, 2 years ago with the Killian Hayes, Sadiq Bey, Isaiah Stewart draft, that felt a lot more fun. This feels, maybe it's because of the stakes. Maybe it's because if you miss on this pick, like you're setting back Cade Cunningham. Maybe that's why it's less fun. But yeah, this draft discussion does not feel as fun. And so I'm glad we were able to talk about not just the draft for 45 minutes.
Yeah, be nice to each other, guys. I mean, don't invest your well-being and other people's well-being based on which college players they like. It's basketball. Let's enjoy it.
Yeah. And like, if you're wrong, being wrong isn't fun. Like, someone who had Killian Hayes number one on their big board, being wrong, not always fun. People make fun of you for it for a very long time. Even if you're right about Tyrese Maxey, nobody remembers that part. Anyway, Ben, let the people know where they can find you, where they can find what you've been cooking up for the website.
Yeah, at BR Golker on Twitter. Always on Detroit Bad Boys in the comments section. Thanks for listening, everybody. We appreciate it.
No, absolutely. And of course, you can always find me on Twitter at Laz Chance. That's at LazChance. All right, everybody, this has been this week's episode of the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. Again, don't know when the next one will come out. Hopefully try and get one more prior to the draft in a couple of weeks. But until then, we'll see you.